What happens when comfortable Western faith collides with the world's most brutal realities? Nick Ripken's journey takes us into the heart of persecution, where belief is tested beyond imagination. Landing at a bombed-out airstrip in Somaliland in 1992, Ripken stepped into what he could only describe as hell on earth. The regional capital lay in ruins. Among 70,000 residents, only 7 houses still had intact roofs. People wandered aimlessly through streets littered with landmines. Every communal well had been deliberately destroyed. Instead of food or medicine, heavily armed convoys brought khat, an addictive narcotic plant that helped desperate people temporarily forget their misery. The marketplace revealed a disturbing truth. The supply line for evil was better established and a lot more efficient than the supply line for good. Standing amid such devastation, Ripken found himself crying out, "Where are you, God?" How does a farm boy from rural Kentucky end up in the world's most dangerous conflict zones? Basketball dominated Ripken's childhood until an Easter service at age 11 when the resurrection story resonated deeply. Later, a spiritual encounter at a cheese factory changed his path. He abandoned his University of Kentucky scholarship to study religion and met Ruth, his opposite yet perfect partner, in their shared calling to African mission work. By 1992, they were in Mogadishu during Somalia's civil war, where warlords lived in luxury while children starved. In one heartbreaking moment, a mother thrust her infant through his window begging, "Take my baby! All of my other children have died. Please save this one," before the driver sped away. Despite establishing feeding centers serving 50,000 people daily, their efforts sometimes backfired. After delivering food to a village, they discovered a neighboring clan had attacked it, stealing supplies and torturing residents. Villagers began warning, "You better not take any food from those people. They will get you killed." Living between war-torn Somalia and relatively normal Kenya created a jarring disconnect. Somalia felt like stepping into the world of the Old Testament. The situation forced Ripken to ask his sons, "Are we willing to die for Jesus?" Then tragedy struck. On Easter Sunday 1997, their 16-year-old son Timothy died from a severe asthma attack in Nairobi. At the funeral, their Somali SPAF member Omar observed, "Why can't we Muslims know that our loved ones are in paradise when they die? Why is it that only these followers of Jesus know exactly where they're going after death?" What if the most resilient faith exists in the world's most challenging environments? Seeking answers about God's sovereignty amid evil, Ripken assembled a persecution task force to study faith in hostile environments across 45 countries. In Russia, he discovered how Soviet oppression had forged a resilient underground church. Christians faced layered persecution, military personnel denied promotions, pastors imprisoned, families pressured, children humiliated. This persecution wasn't just physical, but psychological and social, designed to break believers through countless small cuts. What emerged was a portrait of faith that thrives within suffering, like a flower pushing through concrete. Dimitri exemplified this resilience, standing at attention every morning for 17 years in a Soviet prison, facing east with raised arms, singing praise to God while prisoners threw waste at him. Imprisoned for reading Bible stories to his sons, he was the lone believer among 1,500 criminals. His faith remained anchored through two disciplines, his morning heart song and collecting scraps to write Bible verses for memory. When he finally broke and agreed to renounce his faith, his distant family sensed his despair and prayed. Miraculously, Dimitri heard their voices and found renewed strength. Later, when guards discovered his handwritten scriptures and prepared to execute him, all 1,500 criminals stood singing Dimitri's heart song. His jailers released him in terror, and when they demanded to know who he was, Dimitri declared, "I am a son of the living God, and Jesus is his name." What connects persecuted believers across vastly different cultures and political systems? Consistently, they report, "We learned it from our mothers, our grandmothers, and our great-grandmothers." In China, under communist oppression, the church grew from thousands to potentially over 100 million believers. House church leaders described prison as their seminary, with one man stating simply, "Those are the people who raise the dead." In Islamic countries, former Muslims found Christ through dreams and visions, including a former militant who had killed over 100 people before seeing Jesus saying, "I can get the blood off if you will just find me and believe in me." Singing emerged as a form of spiritual resistance across cultures. Aisha, imprisoned for converting from Islam, sang praises to Jesus so powerfully that the police chief released her and asked her to share her faith with his family. This pattern connects directly to biblical examples like Paul and Silas singing in prison, revealing music as a powerful weapon in the spiritual arsenal of the persecuted. After interviewing over 700 persecuted believers across 72 countries, Ripken discovered his greatest enemy isn't communism, Buddhism, or Islam. It's lostness. Persecution stems from people surrendering to Jesus and refusing to keep their faith private. This challenges Western prayers to end persecution. Since Jesus promised rejection for his followers, perhaps we're asking for the wrong thing. Persecuted believers rarely pray for suffering to end, but for faithfulness through it. When Chinese believers questioned why God blessed Americans more, Ripken shared their own miraculous stories. They became his teachers, contrasting their secret meetings with America's public worship, their torn Bible pages with his seven versions, their prison-trained pastors with Western seminaries. "Tell us," they asked, "which of these things do you think are the greatest miracles?" When Samira, a convert from Islam who had fled after leading 30 women to Christ, witnessed a public baptism in Kentucky, she whispered, "I cannot believe I've lived long enough to see people baptized in public, no one shooting, threatening, imprisoning, or killing them." What would happen if we lived as if resurrection were real? After learning from faithful followers like Dimitri and Samira, Ripken's question shifted from why God allows persecution to what do I do with this now, Lord? The persecuted church doesn't need our pity. We need their perspective. They've discovered that when you have nothing left but Jesus, Jesus is enough. Their lives show that faith isn't about avoiding suffering, but finding purpose within it. What if comfort has made our faith anemic, while persecution has made theirs vibrant? The most powerful testimony isn't found in megachurches, but in dark prison cells where believers sing despite their chains. These stories invite us to a deeper, costlier faith, one that doesn't promise safety, but offers God's unshakable presence in our darkest hours. Will you embrace this insane faith that inverts the world's values? Those who have suffered most wouldn't trade their scars for all the comfort in the world.